American incarceration experience during World War II. I'm also a member in good standing of the Portland chapter of the Japanese American Citizens League, a national civil rights organization. I'm testifying today on the issue of the City of Portland joining the Joint Terrorism Task Force. The citizens of Portland must be assured that constitutional and civil rights are not violated. The protection of these rights is best assured by the oversight and audit of enforcement activities at both local and national levels. Our Japanese American organizations annually sponsor a Day of Remembrance Memorial on or about February 19. On that day in 1942, during World War II, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066. It was the first step leading to the evacuation and forced incarceration of 120,000 persons of Japanese ancestry from their homes on the west coast of the United States in violation of the United States Constitution. The incarceration involved detention behind barbed wire fences patrolled by armed United States military personnel. Had there been objective oversight of enforcement activity at that time in history, the incarceration of persons of Japanese ancestry might not have occurred. Shortly after, hours after December 7, 1941, when the government of Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, on that evening, December 7, the FBI, working from pre-prepared lists, visited the private residences of people of Japanese ancestry and arrested and detained leaders of the Japanese community. And that kind of activity followed during the rest of that week. Subsequently, exclusion orders under Executive Order 9066 were posted in neighborhoods where the Japanese population lived. And the curious thing is, it was suspected that in order for the FBI to visit the residences of Japanese community during the week of December 7, and also in order to post the exclusion orders in the Japanese neighborhoods, they had cooperative information from the Bureau of Census, which was a violation of that particular law. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, very much, and thank you all. Next three
are Joanne Bowman, Tom Nelson, and Madeline Elder. They'll be followed by Elizabeth Pratt, Channy Geigelteller, and Ashley Albies.
Welcome back to the City Council. We're glad you're here. Ms. Bowman, would you like to begin?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council members. For the record, I'm Joanne Bowman, and I'm here on behalf of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. If I had 3 minutes, I would tell you how great and wonderful I think all the work you've done behind the scenes were, but since I don't have that time, I'm cutting that from my presentation.
Oh, no. I'm teasing.
So I really want to applaud the work that's happened. I know that there was a heightened sense of fear that was created after the Thanksgiving Day alleged attempted bombing, and that we could have acted based on that fear. And I think what we're doing today is acting on a very thoughtful, engaged conversation and dialogue with a lot of community members being involved. Having said that, I have a couple of concerns about the ordinance that you are about to vote on today. My primary concern, as has been raised by a couple of other people, is the fact that the police chief will have a higher security clearance than the police commissioner, and that doesn't seem to make sense that the boss wouldn't know more than the person who reports to the boss. And so I think that that's a real concern. I'm also concerned that power is placed in the hands of one individual. Regardless of what you think about the current police chief won't always be here. So that means any police chief will actually be making a decision about how engaged and involved we would be in joint terrorism work. I think that that's a mistake. I would rather have my elected leader so that if they did something that I didn't like, then I'd have a recourse, which is to work to get them out of office. Another issue that I'm concerned about is Portland police officers have their hands full. Clearly, we are in a state of crisis in this community. We have big issues with the police department. We need much more training. We need more training on how to identify people with mental health issues, training on how to identify gang members, training on how to de-escalate situations. And I think that this takes the Portland police away from their core mission, which is to protect and serve Portlanders. And then the third point that I'd like to make is that I believe that the city attorney's office does not serve the city council well. Recently, they have not wanted information that they should have been interested in, they have not provided information when they should have. For example, you know, like hiding the plaques that were in the park. I mean, I'm getting concerned that the city attorney, because they're so suit averse, that they give bad information, which ends up costing us much more money in the long run than it needs to. And so, again, I want to end by saying thank you very much. I think you've done an incredible job of listening to the public, taking into account what the concerns are. But the few concerns that I still have are that the police are already overwhelmed and they should be focused on their core mission, that the police commissioner should be the one with the highest security clearance, and then number three, that I'm concerned with the city attorneys and the advice that they give. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Bowman.
Just to clarify, I hear your concerns and I share some of them. Would you and the Albana Ministerial Alliance support this? If you were me, would you vote for it?
If I were you and I changed it so that the police commissioner was the one with the highest level of a security clearance, then I think it would be the police commissioner would be the one making a decision. I don't understand why the police chief would be the one making a decision and not the police commissioner.
So if we made that change, then
if that change was made, then yes, I think it would be something that I could live with.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Thomas Nelson, attorney. I want to share the concern that I haven't heard expressed today, and that is the effect that this will have upon the Muslim community. I work closely with a number of members in the Muslim community, including at a number of mosques, and I've also done a lot of legal work relating to events following 9/11. Right now, I think more than ever, more than after the year or two after 9/11, there is a need for protection of the Muslim community because of the Islamophobia that has been generated in the last year or two or three. All you have to do is turn on the television to see it. The Portland Police Bureau's role, of course, primarily according to its own motto, is to protect and serve. And the Muslim community needs that protection. The city of Portland has spent a lot of time working with the Arab Muslim Police Advisory Council, which I'm a member, trying to put together a means of enhancing that cooperation. We made a lot of progress. We have a lot of understanding. The concern that I have, frankly, is that there is a significant amount of distrust in the Muslim community for the Department of Justice and its subsidiary, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I sent you a letter, and I have copies of it here. I'll give it to the clerk at the conclusion of my testimony. I've been involved in four particular individual situations in Portland starting in 2002 and as recently as now, where I think, frankly, the FBI and the Department of Justice have fanned the flames of Islamophobia. Brandon Mayfield's one of them. I give a specific site, two sites in my paper about that. I give the other three examples as well. If this resolution passes, frankly, the concern that I have as a legal advisor to some members of the Muslim community, is that they will be reluctant to involve themselves in any way with the Portland Police Bureau because they will suspect the Portland Police Bureau. I'll give you one example. After the Christmas tree bombing, or alleged bombing, there was a lot of Islamophobia flying around, including, as we know, a burning of a mosque in Corvallis. In local mosque at the Masjid Asab, there was a bomb threat, and Portland Police Bureau members went to answer that bomb threat. I was called in on that because there was a little bit of suspicion then that this might be a way of infiltrating. We know that the congregations of the mosques are infiltrated greatly already.
So I need you to summarize.
Yeah. Basically, I want to say if this resolution passes, to summarize, I think it will have a profound effect upon the attitude of the Portland Police, and more importantly, of the Muslim community and the trust that they've over years built up in the Portland Police. They will feel that they cannot trust the Portland Police anymore because they won't know whether they're there as spies or as first responders. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Elder?
Good afternoon, and thank you for listening to my comments. My name is Madeline Elder. I'm president of Communications Workers of America, Local 7901. At our I represent telecommunication workers, high-tech workers, pre-press workers, and recently we've been involved with immigrant cab drivers to better their working conditions. At our March 24th membership meeting, we passed the following resolution: move to oppose the City of Portland's efforts to rejoin the Joint Terrorism Task Force. In our discussion on the resolution, many points stand out, but our position was reached because the labor movement is all about the freedom to gather in meetings or peaceful picket lines without the FBI or any other agency turning it into a potential terrorist plot. We have a legal right to assemble, and even more under the National Labor Relations Act. We should not be subject to the FBI's method of collecting information on anyone who participates in our activities. It would have a chilling effect, and has in the past had a chilling effect, on our right to organize, negotiate good contracts, and otherwise defend our rights under the National Labor Relations Act. In addition, with the brother and sister here, we believe that an injury to one is an injury to all, and in particular the Muslim community. The current resolution, we really feel, still does not address our issues sufficiently, and so we respectfully request that the City of Portland not join the Joint Terrorism Task Force of Oregon.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. Next three.
The next three are Elizabeth Pratt, Chani Geigel-Teller, and Ashley Albies. And then following them will be Greg Kafori, Saba Ahmed, and James Daraha.
Welcome. We're really glad that you're here. Ms. Pratt?
Thank you. I'm Betsy Pratt, president of the League Women Voters of Portland. We would like to thank City Council for incorporating a number of safeguards into the JTTF resolution. Annual reports to the council and public, city attorney provided training for bureau members, regular scheduled meetings among key leaders and when personnel changes take place, and a requirement that any changes be made in a public hearing will add transparency and accountability. We do have a few concerns and suggestions to share with you. The 2008 Attorney General's guidelines give the FBI the authority to conduct assessments without any factual predicate and preliminary investigations based solely on the possibility of criminal activity. The Department of Justice Office of Inspector General stated that this possibility of criminal activity standard is easily attainable and speculative. For these reasons, the League supports limiting our officers to participation in investigations in which there is a reasonable suspicion of criminal conduct as required by Oregon law. The 2008 guidelines also loosened the limitations on the retention of information related to attendance at public meetings, clearly a First Amendment activity. Oregon law prohibits retention of these types of files. By restricting our officers to investigations with a criminal nexus, the city will achieve a degree of assurance that our officers will not violate Oregon law. The League encourages additional oversight of our officers' JTTF activities. The current draft relies on bureau members to report potential violations of Oregon law. Asking our officers to monitor their own action lacks suitable mechanisms for accountability. We would like to have the city attorney and IPR director regularly review all JTTF files created. Any files collected in violation of Oregon law should be purged. There have been questions why Portland has engaged in repeated public debate about the city's participation in the JTTF. In our view, it is due to the fact that council is responsible for both legislative and administrative functions, and city contracts appear on the weekly council agendas. This provides a level of transparency not available in other communities, but highly valued by Portlanders. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, and thanks for modifying the length of your testimony. Appreciate it, Ms. Pratt. Hi, welcome.
Just after you thanked her, can I respectfully request 3 minutes?
For you, yes.
Thanks so much. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Shani Geigley-Teller, and I'm here with Sisters of the Road. At Sisters, we are committed to creating a culture of safety and respect for all. We know that to work for nonviolence, we must also work to end the oppression that keeps members of our community struggling for dignity and safety. For that reason, we oppose any increased contract with the Joint Terrorism Task Force. History shows us that the federal government has created many systems that allow the FBI to work with local police to spy on and harm individuals working for justice. They've broken up families and communities and even murdered activists who are considered politically threatening to state power. The most violent treatment has been inflicted upon communities of people of color. In the 60s, the FBI counterintelligence program infiltrated organizations such as the Students for a Democratic Society, those who supported the peace movement, the American Indian movement, the NAACP, the Black Panther Party for Defense. Even Dr. King was heavily followed by the FBI, who spread false information about him and his family to undermine his leadership. In 2002, the Tribune published an article detailing that city funds have been used for spying on citizens until at least the 80s. Thousands of engaged Portlanders were monitored, followed, and spied on for doing honorable, nonviolent civic work. The list of groups that were monitored includes People's Food Co-op, the Bicycle Repair Collective, and even Sisters of the Road. During the 90s, police records show that officers infiltrated and monitored activists from Peace and Justice Works and Portland Cop Watch. The FBI programs that allowed for these attacks on our communities are continued today through policies such as the Patriot Act and Homeland Security. Last September, the FBI raided the homes of five anti-war activists in Minnesota. In December, under the direction of U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald, the FBI delivered 9 new subpoenas in Chicago to anti-war activists. These activists and their communities are experiencing this now. They are being threatened with imprisonment for refusing to appear before the court. These high-profile cases are not exceptions. We know that every day people of color, Muslims, immigrants, peace activists, and labor organizers are being monitored and targeted, imprisoned, and tortured by our government. Locally, we have also seen the severe injustices, harms, and deaths inflicted on our communities by the Portland police. We have worked hard with other community organizations to create more transparency and accountability of local law enforcement. Working with the JTTF is a huge landslide backwards from all that we have gained, even while we still have so far to go. Our communities carry the burden of the history laid out here. Still, we work together to organize a society where our most basic needs are met and our civil rights are respected. We understand that because we are actively resisting the status quo, we will be targeted at local and federal levels. But we also expect our local leaders to work on our behalf to make it a challenge for the FBI and other oppressive enforcement systems. No police at daily briefings, no FBI monitoring our movements, and no JTTF in Portland.
Thank you for your testimony. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. I, too, would request 3 minutes. I prepared for 3. I'll do my best to keep it under there.
For you, yes.
Thank you, Council, and for your attention to this issue and all your work on this resolution. I'm Ashley Albies. I'm co-chair of the Portland chapter of the National Lawyers Guild, a progressive legal organization whose members work for social justice and human rights. I'm also part of the legal team challenging the federal government's NSA warrantless wiretapping program on behalf of an Islamic charity, to which the FBI and its director were named defendants. That program was declared to have been to have violated the law by a federal judge in California. We welcome that Portland Police Bureau officers remain in the chain of command of the police chief and the commissioner and the annual reporting, and we strongly urge and request that this council ensure that the report is accurate and over-inclusive rather than overly secretive. And I think Ms. Meyer set out a great number of content that we'd like to see, and we certainly support that. We do, however, have serious concerns about the FBI using local police to gather intelligence on lawful and legitimate political activity. The FBI has a long history of violating civil rights in the course of its investigations, and I think it would be a huge mistake and naive even to presume that this is a thing of the past or that it ended with the Bush administration, or to presume that the U.S. Attorney in Oregon ultimately would have any influence over the national practices of the FBI. A recent Office of Inspector General report demonstrated that there's recent and ongoing civil rights violations by the FBI and reflects a culture within the FBI that such violations are acceptable. These violations occurred during these low-level assessments or preliminary investigations, which our Portland Police Bureau members may be asked to participate in and may be allowed to participate in. Indeed, our case challenging the wiretap program was a Bush-era program, but was staunchly defended by an administration that, prior to taking office, condemned that same program as illegal. There's also recent issues, as Andrea Meyer mentioned, in San Francisco. We simply can't support allowing members of our police department to snoop for the FBI based on this vague and undefined term, criminal nexus. There's high potential for violations of Oregon law, which requires reasonable suspicion to investigate crime. allowing the FBI to use Portland Bureau members as vehicles for gathering intelligence in our community would undermine the strong protections of ORS 181575. That law sends a clear message that we won't tolerate monitoring of political and religious activity, and that we won't tolerate any investigation of anything other than criminal activity. The FBI has no such restrictions. Its guidelines are broader and vaguer than any protections that we have here. They were expanded under President Bush and remain expansive under President Obama. The FBI has consistently monitored and investigated political and religious activity unrelated to criminal activity, and this resolution would allow the FBI to then direct the members of our Bureau to do the same. We also have concerns that the city attorney does not have security clearance. If there's an issue that a Portland Police Bureau member has concerns, they can go to the city attorney, but the city attorney might not have access to that information required to make a formal assessment. It's within the discretion of the FBI to grant the city attorney information, and we strongly support the idea that if that information is denied, that the Portland Police Bureau member be pulled from the JTTF. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate it. We're going to take one more panel, and then we will have been at this an hour and a half, and we will have a break, and then we will come back and have some discussion and questions from the City Council to anyone they want to bring forward. So the next three
are Greg Kafouri, Saba Ahmed, and James Daraha.
Good afternoon, Mr. Kafouri. How are you? Three? Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. The Portland Police should not join with the FBI. With some honorable exceptions, the history of the FBI has been more that of a political secret police than of a law enforcement agency. In the 1930s and 1940s, the FBI ignored the rapid growth and even denied the existence of organized crime. In the 1950s, the FBI was the action arm in a witch hunt against leftists. Unions, universities, the artistic community were left broken and humiliated, cowering in the face of informers and drumhead hearings. The film industry lost such progressive luminaries as Dalton Trumbo, Sterling Hayden, John Garfield. Hollywood itself was so intimidated by this era of betrayal that the most controversial movie of the 1950s was Pillow Talk. By the mid-1960s, the FBI turned its attention to those protesting the Vietnam War. Peace groups and demonstrators were infiltrated by FBI spies and agent provocateurs. J. Edgar Hoover himself then took it upon himself to decide who would be the next great black leader in America. And the leading voices were targeted. The FBI efforts to destroy Martin and Malcolm have been extensively documented. In city after city, the FBI covertly organized murderous police attacks on Black Panther Party headquarters. This came to an end only when Seattle's mayor, Wes Ullman, blew the whistle on them at a press conference. The COINTEL program of the 70s and 80s featured illegal wiretapping, burglaries, black bag jobs. These became routine, widespread. In the 1980s, the Ban the Bomb movement, the struggle against nuclear power, and the traditional peace movement, even the Quakers, were spied upon, targeted, infiltrated. In the last decade, we've seen what the New York Magazine in December of last year described as, quote, a raft of terrorism cases in which the only terrorist plots the defendants have participated in were those invented by the government. Portland does not even have true political control of our own police force, and the idea that we will somehow maintain civilian control of our officers once they are taken into the FBI fold is difficult to take seriously. Portland should say no to the hype that we've seen, to the manipulation we've been subjected to, and we should say no to the FBI. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Kafouri. Hi, welcome.
Thank you. Mayor Adams and commissioners, my name is Saba Ahmed, and I'm a board member with the Oregon League of Minority Voters, Oregon League of Conservation Voters, Oregon Muslim Citizens Alliance, and the Islamic Society of Greater Portland. I represent the Muslim community in Portland. We have faced several challenges over the past 11 years that I've been here. The recent Christmas tree bombing was just one incident that brought lots of hate crimes that followed that incident. Our perspective has been that the FBI and the law enforcement, they have kind of use these terror tactics to kind of incite a violent situation, and we're the ones who get to suffer the consequences of it. It has been quite devastating. There are women whose headscarves are pulled off here in Portland. There are numerous hate crimes that have been occurring. The mosque was burned in Corvallis. I mean, we are strongly urging Portland City Council not to rejoin the JTTF. We understand the compromise that has been made with the ACLU in order to represent all of our interests, but we do feel that our interests are not being served by the FBI and this resolution. And we would continue to just ask you guys to consider us and work with our community. We haven't been as involved in the legal process, but we'd like to work with you. You represent us. We are constituents in your districts. And the Muslim community here in Portland has been growing exponentially over the last 10 years and will continue to grow. So we do want to urge you guys to take a very cautious vote on this one. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir.
Good afternoon. I'm James DeRaja. I am a victim of FBI JTF activity, activity that is kept out of the press and is kept out of court, activity that at present functions as invisible human rights cases in the United States. The things that you've heard so far this afternoon about past FBI activity continue to the very present. I am a political refugee returned to the U.S. in 2002 after Canada refused to give asylum to me and my child. We are not foreign-born enemy combatants. We're U.S. citizens set upon by the federal government because of my expression of political dissent as a university student and professor. The persecution that we fled included federal quality of life disruption, ongoing covert entry into our home, theft and destruction of personal property, placing harmful chemicals in our home, and manipulation of our medical care. I am myself still suffering the effects of manipulation of medical care, but cannot seek needed treatment without fear of further harm. The U.S. Department of Justice is aware of our case and has given no reply. In 2002, the federal government arranged the parental abduction of my child in order to force us to abandon our claim for refugee status and to keep the human rights abuses that it forced us out of the country from being heard in open court. Although child abduction is a federal offense, U.S. courts, FBI, and Department of Justice refuse to intervene. We are excluded from the protections of constitutional law as well as international law. This process of exclusion, which we've recently heard of in the Guantanamo case, is an FBI process that is used throughout the country. It's used to set aside persons that are targeted.
So, sir, could I have you summarize your points?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. To summarize, the concern with civil and human rights in this instance is especially acute since these activities not only violate Oregon law, but violate the Constitution and violate international law. These are offenses that are routinely carried out by the FBI that amount to crimes against humanity.
Thank you, sir. And Amrit Sandhu, or are you Amrit? You can talk to Amrit, is on my public safety peacekeeping team, to see if we can help you, sir. If you could introduce yourself, Amrit, that'd be great. All right, it is now 3:31. We will take a recess and reconvene at 3:41. Oh, goodness, yeah, we'll get all the way through the list. Sorry to keep you waiting. How you doing, doctor?